Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Balls for Terry Show. Tonight, I'm joined by the Colonel, Jerry Whiffler.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having us.
Well, glad to have you. So I'm back on the air after a long absence. Thanks to Rob Cole for still keeping me hot in his coffers as a backup host, and I'm glad to be here. And I brought Mr. Whiffler with me, another Wantagh resident, Met fan, and just all-around great guy.
That's correct. Thank you very much for the kind words. It's very nice to be here with the beautiful environs of WGBB.
Yeah, well, I mean, here in West Babylon, I mean, how better does it get than this? We got Brian on that side. We're in West Babylon. I mean, right? This is...
It does get better. But this isn't bad. Once we found it.
Yeah, once we found it. Yeah. We ended up in ShopRite for about 20
minutes. Got a little tour of the Route 109, but then we got here.
Yeah, it was
we
good.
Got here in one
good.
Piece.
Before we get started, though, let me mention two things. Number one, if you want to call into the show tonight, our number is 631-888-8811. Again, 631-888-8811. You want to join Jerry and I here on Sports Talk 1240, as well as our sponsors tonight, Amity Ales and Bunker Ales. Jerry, talk a bit about our sponsors.
Yeah, our sponsors, Amity Ale Brew Pub and Eatery down at 192 Broadway in Amityville, Long Island. Beautiful Amityville. It's right just at the gazebo on 110. Amity Ales is a brew pub and eatery. It's opened about a year. Really outstanding American-Irish food. It's a great pub atmosphere. Bruno and John, the owners down there, are really nice people. They're also affiliated with Corey's Ale House over in Wantagh. And our co-host for this evening, co-sponsor for the evening, is Bunker Ales, which is their in-house beer that they make on premises. They were making it this morning, actually, at 6 a.m., and working hard.
Heisenberg at work this morning?
Yep. The lab was out, and the hydrometer was working, and the things were cleaned, sanitized. So absolutely get down there to Amity Ales Brew Pub and Eatery in Amityville. Great spot.
That's great. Thank you for Amity Ales, Bunker Ales, for sponsoring us tonight. And, folks, also want to mention at 9:30 we will be talking to Mets legend, 1969 hero Ron Swoboda, also a big hero of my co-host tonight, Mr. Whiffler. Ron will be joining us. He's down in Tampa, I think, visiting his dad for his birthday. And Ron's a really great guy. I was fortunate enough to meet him at the Mets camp in 2012, and my brother knows him very well, and he's a gracious guy. And Jerry's looking forward to talking to one of his boyhood idols, Jerry.
He was my boyhood idol. I mean, I was 7 years old when the Mets won in 69, so I just barely remember getting into baseball. My dad was an old Brooklyn Dodger fan, so I was not allowed to root for the Yankees. I was a Met fan. But I came along right at the right time. Anybody who knew about the Mets then, they say, oh, you must have been a big Seaver fan. And I say, nope, my favorite ball player was Ron Swoboda.
Ron Swoboda.
And
Rocky.
You know what? I think I picked a good one because everything you hear is Ron is a great guy.
Yeah, no, we're looking forward to having Ron on, and I know Jerry's excited for that. But let's talk a little bit about baseball, right? It's April 2nd, 2017. Jerry, baseball is beckoning tomorrow for us Mets fans. But before we get to the Mets, let's talk about the New York Yankees. And you know what? I mean, I just love spring training.
Sad face.
Right. Jerry right now has a dejected look on his face. You know,
sad thing.
It's so nice to have a fellow Yankee hater with me.
Oh, it couldn't have been better.
So, Jerry, let me just talk a bit about Masahiro Tanaka. Sayonara. I go unscored upon in spring training. The guy literally threw like 22 shutout innings.
Out of control. He was lights out.
He gives up a touchdown to the Tampa Rays today.
Exactly. And an extra point. They made the extra point. So it was, the Yankees were only able to get a field goal on the board.
I love it. And somebody tells me, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, hey, Paul, the Yankees do really good in the preseason. What do you think? I'm like, you know what that means? Absolutely nothing.
Squatto.
It's
nothing.
Squatto. And the Sanchez.
The Sanchez.
There's a new Sanchez.
The Sanchez.
0-for-5, 3 strikeouts. He left like 14 guys.
Was he 0-for-5 today?
Yes.
I have to tell you, I honestly didn't pay any attention because I don't pay attention to the Yankees unless I do check the papers. I want to see if they lost. When they do, I'm very happy. I was very pleased. I left. We had baseball practice today for the kids.
Yeah. Well,
so we had that.
Finally, a day to get outside.
I walked outside. The sun finally came out today. I could walk out. I get in the car and. And you want to hear John Sterling. Oh, it was awesome. He was...
And the New York Yankees are struggling.
Did you ever notice how he said... He doesn't pronounce K.
Is the Yankees.
Yeah.
The Yankees.
I think he's burping Jack.
Oh, and he actually says, oh, I think we'd be very... Here's your Tanaka for the next start. I'd put my money on him having a good day. All right, so from Tampa. It was bad.
Well, brought to you by Sapporo, the greatest beer in Japan. Sapporo.
Yeah. And you know what happened there, Frank, John? I don't know what's going on with those Yankees today, Susan.
Oh, it was bad. But you know what? That's always a happy day because you know what? Tomorrow they'll probably win. They'll go on. They're going to win. You know what, 115 games?
I mean, you're right. They should. Well, I think they should go 161-1, right,
Bird,
after today. I mean,
you know,
small.
Bird probably hit 65 home runs.
Yeah, at least, right? I mean, he's Greg Bird. He's been at least Mickey Mantle Jr.
All right. We
there's never enough Yankee passion
here
for me.
Look,
never enough.
There's never enough. I'll tell you.
Never
and
enough.
That's what, let's bring it back to, it's all about me. So let's bring it back to Swoboda. And as I had mentioned to you before the show, one of the reasons why I despise the Yankees was the day that Swoboda was traded from the Mets. It was 1971. It was just the anniversary, like a couple weeks ago. He gets traded. He's my greatest hero. I'm 9 years old. So I love Swoboda. And I was in the basement of two friends of mine. They were both Yankee fans. And at the time, 71, those are big days. Mets are good. Yankees stink.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And they spiked the football on me. Let me know, hey, guess what? Guess what happened today? I'm like, what? Well, Swoboda got traded to the Expos. No. And that's what happened. End of an era.
Well, you know what? It's nice to see us on top now. I think it's a big season in City Field. Let's talk a bit about our Mets.
All right.
Let's do a little bit of a Met preview. I mean, tomorrow we have maybe one of the best 2-3 pitchers in the league pitching for us, Noah Syndergaard. I think we have no real worries with him. But let's talk about Matt Harvey.
Matt Harvey.
What do you think about Matt Harvey?
You know what? You want to like Matt Harvey. I think that it's lining up really well for Harvey because you think of it this way. He's been around a while now. It's been like 13, right? 2013.
And he's like 28 years
fourth
old.
Year,
too.
Right? But he hasn't had a full season in a while, right? The pressure's actually off Harvey a bit, I would say.
He's the third starter.
Exactly. See, this isn't a situation where we're in the mid-2000s or the 90s, right?
Right.
You know, with the, you know, Art Howe, you know, in the dugout, you know, helming the team, right? So it's not like the whole spotlight's on Harvey. So, I mean, the luxury that, you know, if you look at, if I could be Mr. Met, right? If we are pessimistic true selves, right?
Of course.
You know, I've fully embraced my inner Davey Johnson this year. And I was saying this to my friend Pete this morning. We're making the beer. And he goes, I said, you know what? Back in 86, Davey Johnson said, you know what, guys? In spring training, he set the tone. He said, you know what? We're going to be really good this year. We're going to beat the hell out of most of the teams in this league, and we're not going to apologize for it. And they're going to all have to come after us. And you know what? I'm looking at the bright side. I think that's the way I think the Mets season's going to go this year. I think we're at the top of the heap. I think the Nationals are due to stub their toes a little bit. They're a very good team. A lot of respect for the Nationals. But I think this staff is going to be absolutely phenomenal. And I think that Harvey, in this situation, it plays right in to exactly the situation we need for him. He needs to just take it easy, hit his spots, and he's the number three guy.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to be fine.
And I think that people are overlooking someone else. The guy after Syndergaard and before Harvey is Jacob DeGrom.
DeGrom looked
who's
pretty.
Healthy, throwing 98 miles an hour.
Looking
I think
good.
People have been sleeping on him. Big year for him. If you get the three of them pitching well,
yeah,
and Wheeler's coming back now. I mean, I still want to see Wheeler, you know, pitch.
Oh, he's got
10
to do
innings.
It. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And the thing with DeGrom, now we're not going to. We just said, in case anybody's listening and transcribing the show, which I know a lot of people do whenever we're on the air.
Well, hopefully we've got our one listener, which is
they're
going to,
you know, wait until the phones are totally not lit up.
Well, hold on, 631-888-8811 for those of you who maybe wanted to call.
We might set a record for longest distance phone call for WGBB history tonight.
Well, that would be nice.
Well, let's see if they make the call. As I was saying, we were just talking about Tanaka, how spring training doesn't mean anything. So we have to put a little asterisk on. You know, DeGrom looked good.
Yeah, he did.
We'll take it. He looked
did.
Good. But the thing that about DeGrom that I like to point out is that last year he gutted through.
Oh yeah.
A lot of stuff. That's, you know, going back 100 years, you say, you know, the true elite pitchers are the ones that win without their best stuff.
Right.
And DeGrom last year had a few games where he absolutely was not on his game, but he collected some wins.
Yeah,
he made pitches.
He's huge, and hopefully the paper doll that's from Melville, Mr. Steven Matz, decides to get back on the field at some point. Because listen, you love this kid, but he just can't stay healthy, it's kind of scary. And you know what? You know what? It's better when Sandy Alderson, you know, fellow Marine.
That's right. Hey, be nice to Sandy.
Who I like a lot. I think he's done a great job with this team. But I'll just say what he said in the paper was, it's concerning how this guy's always getting hurt. That just tells you something. That was
and
his
from a circumspect Harvard guy like Sandy, concerning that could be a huge
one. Yeah, right. And I just
I'm hoping that doesn't mean what I think it means.
Right, his words that came out were just, I don't know, they hit. It wasn't just me. I was reading a couple of guys on Twitter like, if Sandy Alderson's saying this, clearly it's something that's bothering
it
him.
It is.
That it's something they're disappointed with.
Definitely of concern. You know, the kid's got to stay on the field. And he knows that more than anybody else. Matt knows.
He wants to get paid, right? He's not making a ton of money yet.
Right.
And if he does not stay healthy, he's going to miss out on obviously a massive payday. Because when he's pitching, he's a great talent. The kid's a very good pitcher. And they need a lefty in their rotation.
And he's a left. Exactly. Take the words right out of my mouth, Mikey. He's lefty. The kid could pitch till he's 75 years old, you know. Figure it out, he'd be a lefty reliever. That's the thing, is you tie a right-handed kid's arm behind his back. He says, throw it left hand.
But we'll listen, I think that the pitching will be all right. You know, Familia's only out 15 games.
That was an unfortunate situation. But, yes, the Mets, from just a pure baseball perspective, that's a fortunate thing for them. Yeah. For the team.
What do you think about our left fielder, Yoenis Cespedes?
Oh, the beast. The beast. I will tell you.
I love him personally.
A buddy of mine, we've talked about a lot, Mikey. My friend's name's Mikey. I wasn't doing another dog thing. he and I were texting each other like crazy people. You know, we were all talking about the Mets, and we're like, wouldn't it be great if the Mets could pull Cespedes out of this, you know, a couple years ago, and that they did. And, you know, the two of us are like, well, we should be the two best GMs in baseball. We knew it. And you know, it was a great article. I'm sure you saw it. He was interviewed for one of the publications a couple of weeks ago during spring training about how he's found a home.
Yeah.
And he was so pleased to come back to the Mets. So wish him best of luck.
That's
I think, you know what, in the Mets, you know, you can count on one hand the fearsome sluggers the Mets have had in our entire lifetimes. There aren't that many.
No.
I mean, the Mets are not an offensive historically, they're not offensive. They're offensive to watch.
You know, it was one of the better ones they had. This name is going to invoke a little love from you.
Who's that?
Carlos Beltran.
Oh, Carlos Beltran.
Hall of Fame baseball player.
Yeah.
he put up some big numbers with the Mets.
You know what? I like Carlos, but I love him a lot. I love him a lot. But this gets into the entire who's a Hall of Famer. And I will tell you, I'm not to steal his thunder, but I think my counterpart across the table would put him in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
He's a Hall of Very Good to me, because I think he's an outstanding, crazy, great ball player.
Okay.
But I'm a very tough grader.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know, we don't throw a lot of ribbons around in the Marine Corps, and we don't put people in the Hall of Fame. So I'm like, I think he's awesome, and far beyond, I couldn't dream of doing what he does. He's a very talented guy.
And he's still playing at a high level.
He had a great year for the Yankees last year. Go figure.
Now he's hitting cleanup in Houston this year, which is a great place.
Wow. I mean, it'd be interesting. I guess they're having a good reception for him back in Houston.
Yeah.
He was in Houston.
Yeah.
Had the phenomenal postseason.
Yeah, that's how he cashed in. And he is in a good lineup with a young team. It'd be interesting to see how he does this year. Let's talk about the Mets offense, though, for a second.
Okay.
I look at the Mets offense. I'm a big Cespedes fan, as we talked about. There's some parts of it that worry me a little bit. It's a lot of swings and misses in this lineup, right? Let's talk about the outfield outside of Cespedes. Curtis Granton seems like a nice guy, type of guy you'd love to have over, and seems like a gentleman, but, you know, 230 hitter. The guy in right field, who I've always been, you and I have talked about him many times, Jay Bruce. Jay Bruce is what he is, and Met fans in New York have to understand this guy is not a 270 hitter. He may not even be a 260 hitter.
Mm-hmm.
He's a 250-ish type of hitter, 30, 35 home runs, 100 RBIs, but there's a lot of swings and misses. And, you know, Walker, who I like, Neil Walker, I've always been a fan of, not a high average guy, right? Another 270, 275 guy. And the other thing is interesting is free agents, Walker, Granderson, Bruce,
Walkers.
Duda, all in their Walkers.
They're all in their Walkers.
So this is going to be a very interesting season. And, you know, I think that there's some guys that struggle to make contact. And there'll be some of those days where, you know, second and third, two outs, or guy on third, one out, you want to see him come in, and some of these guys won't deliver. You need at least two or three of these guys to have decent seasons. And I don't even want to mention the catcher, who, you know, I can't stand.
Oh, we're going to get to him. He's going to have his own segment. you know what? Yeah, absolutely right. I agree with everything you're saying, Paul. Going around the outfield, Cespedes, if you know, the old cliche about playing to the back of the baseball card. If he does what he's supposed to, he's Cespedes, we're fine.
Yeah.
Right? But this raises the issue of what goes back to a couple of things. The modern philosophy in baseball, all this sabermetric stuff, right? And the value in the three-run homer. you know, Earl Weaver, the revenge of Earl Weaver, right? It's like,
good old
and,
Earl.
And, you know, the Mets, in many ways, are what we would have called years ago American League built club.
Oh, yeah.
It's the three-run homer. Yeah. It's
Davey Johnson liked to coach that way, too.
Yeah, you know, well, Davey, right, exactly. Because, well, Davey was a good home run hitter, people forget.
Yeah,
it was Davey
second
had
base,
some,
one of the best
some,
ever.
He had some hat, some stick. But the thing with the, where this can raise its head and where things can get exposed is in this, the hot lights of the postseason. And that's exactly what happened to the Mets against the Royals, where the Royals were, it was reversed. The American League team played National League ball, the Royals, and the Mets were playing American League ball. And that's where they got exposed, where they had a couple of defensive miscues in the field with Murphy. They didn't get key hits when they needed them to drive those runners in. And they made some, you know, a couple of bad pitches. But you're absolutely right. With the over-dependence on the long ball, as long as it doesn't become an over-dependence.
Right.
You know, because you have to, and you told me, when Walker says you're going to like Walker, but you have to remember, he's not going to be Murphy. He's not going to hit 310.
He's not a contact hitter.
He's not a contact hitter. Now, personally, I would prefer a sprinkling of contact hitters. I mean, that's why I think that, you know, the Mets had a great favor fall in their lap last year when Reyes came back.
You think big mistake to let Murphy go?
You know, I don't spend the Mets money, right?
Well, you're a fan. We all spend the Mets money.
I personally liked Murphy. I think that he was a... I would not have agreed with a lot of the folks that said he was a net negative or he was, you know, Cohen was down on him. I disagree with... I love Gary Cohen, but I disagreed with that. I thought that what Murphy brought to the table was that grinded out attitude. And I always said that I thought that if the Mets, when he was younger and the Mets were not good, I said, I hope that he's on the Mets long enough to get in the postseason, because I think if we need a hit, you know, when Gary Carter turned out to be the guy who got that hit in Game 6, the guy who actually gutted out a hit, Murphy would be that guy. And look what happened.
Yeah.
You know, he's the one who...
He almost single-handedly carried the Mets...
They're not
to
in the World
Series
without him.
Yeah, right.
They don't beat the Dodgers without him.
No, they don't. Not even. And the Cubs, you know, obviously they swept the Cubs that, you know, in four games, but he was getting all the big hits.
He set the tone early. And, you know, I'm not going to bring up the other guy across town. I almost brought up a name across town who played shortstop. I caught myself. I'm not going to
talk about it. Please, don't.
But yeah, absolutely. Daniel Murphy, to your question, was it a mistake? Hindsight's 2020. I always believe it's a mistake. I would like to have him here. I think that people did recognize last year the different element that he brought to that lineup, that contact thing, drove a lot of their success.
Yeah.
And you're replacing him with guys that swing from the heels, which you can do very well. Mets got to the wild card last year, and they won a lot of games. But I wish him nothing but the best in Washington, except against us.
Right.
But, yeah, it would be nice to...
So, if we want to close the loop on the Mets, Jerry, what's your prediction for the Mets this year? Where are we going?
I say the Mets...
How's it end?
Look, I mean, a lot of people are saying that they're couching their bets. They're saying that they're going to be the wild card, right? But if I just said earlier that... because they don't want to go all in. They don't want to go... Nobody likes to be boastful, right? I'm going in with the Davey Johnson. I think the Mets are going to win the division again. I think it's going to be a repeat of the 2 years ago, not last year. And I think the difference is going to be... the pitching. And I think the difference of the pitching is going to be the thing that people don't talk about much is the middle relief. I think they did enough to shore up their middle relief, because as much as and you can back me up on this. You think about some of the games last year where Syndergaard was absolutely ridiculously good, right?
Many.
And how many times did he have to leave the game in the seventh inning? Sixth, seventh inning, he's starting to get a little gassed.
Well, I just think that's also the culture of baseball.
That's what
it
is.
These guys, you know, and they don't want these guys throwing 120 pitches a game anymore.
And I wish I had some of the guys, the stat guys, would be able to tell you how many of those games did we end up losing. I can remember a couple of them top of my head.
Yeah, of course.
Where once it got into the bullpen, you know, and Familia is very good. You know, I'm hoping that he doesn't, the seal that glimmers, is he Armando Benitez 2.0?
No, I think the thing that worries me about Familia, Jerry, is overuse. This guy has pitched a lot of baseball in the last 2 years. And, that's the thing with, with any young pitcher, it's a lot of pitching. You know, he struggled in some big spots, right? I remember last year my season ended in a bar with my buddy Bill.
I remember a home run.
Yeah, we were watching that game, and he gave it up to, it was a nobody, Gillespie or something, guy in the Giants, and a three-run missile off of him. But, he's in there in a tie game, puts a couple of guys on, fouled a few balls off, boom, guy's a three-run homer, season over.
Right. And
he's pitched a lot, though. You know, and you know, I think what I look back with Familia, he's saved a lot of games. And listen, you don't underestimate the stability of closer. Right? When I was cooking before, doing my dishes, I put the Giants Diamondbacks on. Like, oh, okay, it's 5-4 in the ninth. Fernando Rodney comes in for the Diamondbacks, who's a nightmare. He's throwing 85 miles an hour. I don't know how he gets people out, but he does. Gives up a run. It's 5-4 Giants. Goes to the bottom of the ninth. The Giants spent a boatload of money on their new closer, this guy Mark Melancon. Melancon comes in. Boom, 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 boom. Four hits, gives up two runs, blows the game for Bumgarner.
Right.
So, you know, if you look back and say, a guy like Familia with 51 saves, he saved a lot of games for us, and you can't discount that because you throw other guys in the ninth inning and you sit there and you shake. Addison Reed, by the way, 2 years ago was being run out of town in Arizona. He was god-awful in Arizona.
Yep.
But he's found a spot as a setup guy. Mm-hmm. If, you know, you put these guys in the pressure cooker, it's a whole different ballgame. Now, yep. Familia has failed us in the playoffs. But the guy has saved a lot of games for us in the regular season. So to me, you know, there's still something to be said for that.
I completely agree. And the thing is that you're not in the playoffs without him winning those games.
Right. Not even close.
So,
and they barely made the playoffs last year, right? I mean, by the string of their teeth.
Yeah, I forgot that they were in the playoffs, frankly. It's like, you know, we got that one game, and then, you know, Bumgarner's pitching. I was like, okay.
Whatever.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Fred Flintstone. But, I think that you're... It also brings up the thing about the old days. You had firemen. Remember when they used to call bullpen guys firemen?
Fireman. Goose.
Who's
the Goose.
The guy who comes fireman. In, and Seaver used to make this point also.
Well, wasn't the Rolaids Fireman Award the Rolaids sponsor?
I think it was the Rolaids. Yeah, because putting out the Ogden. Yeah, the Ogden.
Oh, the Ogden. I'm going to turn my back on you now.
And now I got to go. Yeah, the sausage and pepper's going.
And that's it.
And that's that.
And that's that.
And that's that. But, yeah, I mean, that guy, you know, who the... So think about the roster, Paul. So you're... Terry Collins, right?
I'm about 8 inches too tall.
So you're Terry Collins. And you're in a situation where you got men on base. One of your big studs has to come out of the game, right? He's gassed. Who on the Mets, who's that stop, who's the guy that the Mets need to bring in that spot?
To hit or pitch?
To pitch. You got to get out of that jam. Who's getting out of that jam? See, that's the
question. You know, I was reading something about a baseball article today. And they were talking about a guy in the Marlins, this guy, kid pitcher. And he pitched 77 innings last year, struck out like 120 guys as a setup guy. And they said he's the guy that Mattingly brings in when he needs a strikeout. So who do the Mets bring in who's throwing, you know, upper 90s to get a big strikeout with guys in scoring position less than two outs?
My question.
Well, it's either Reed. And the other guy that throws hard, but yeah, I don't know, in pressure, is Robles. Robles, right? Little guy throws in the mid-90s, but Hansel? I've watched him plenty of times.
Hansel?
Yeah.
Hansel.
But I don't trust him. I think the Mets, you know, the bullpen's okay, but they're still...
You know what? And it's not really fair to the Mets to put you on the spot about the Mets. That's a question for every team in baseball.
Yeah, of course.
Because frankly...
Except for, you know who's got the formula? Cleveland, right?
Right.
Where's Andrew Miller pitch?
Right.
Seventh and eighth inning.
Exactly.
And he comes in and strikes guys out. Right. That guy, he'll throw an inning in a third and strike out five guys. Yeah. And that, you know, that you read a lot of major league teams are looking more at that formula, like the Yankees with Patances and Chapman.
Absolutely.
And I hate that the Yankees stink overall, but the Yankees have two great guys in the bullpen.
Oh, lights out.
Right.
And
last year, you don't forget, who the Yankees have in the bullpen? Miller, Patances, and Chapman.
And Chapman, all three.
Right, and they thought that was the form, but the Yankees were all well, outside of that.
The problem was the starters.
Right.
If they had any semblance of some decent starters, that would have been a
good
If
you
formula.
Had those three with the Mets starting rotation,
oh my God.
We would have been down on Broadway in the Canyon
Heroes. That's like if the Giants had the Jets offensive line.
Before we go to break, I mean, you know, we could talk about the rapid fire for you, Jerry. NCAA tournament.
Hey,
how high is it rank?
In
your blank, meter, yeah.
Well, every year, I mean, I have two vested interests. I always like my alma mater of Iona College, New Rochelle, North Avenue. They tend to win the MAC, and they always get blown out in the first round. I never forget, a couple years ago, they had the BYU on the road. They scored, they were beating the crap out of BYU. They were won by 25 points, and then they didn't show up for the second half, and they lost. And Holy Cross, but again, they, you know, those aren't realistic.
Right.
But I had some family. A couple of nephews were at Baylor, as I told you.
Yeah.
And I had another nephew over at South Carolina. Oof. So I was more interested than I would normally be.
Yeah.
Now, I really don't care about the final game. Yeah. I'm like, okay, whatever.
If I'm up that late tomorrow, I'll flip it and have a baseball game
before I watch that. Don Imus used to always say that, you know, if put something on television and somebody's competing, he'll watch.
Yeah.
Like, I could get into curling. Yeah. I mean, you know, when the Olympics are on and they're throwing the stones on the ice, I'll watch it.
Yeah.
You know, so if it's on and I'm kind of, you're not going to get me that. And I'll say this and I'll sacrilege and blaspheme. I'll even watch a soccer game. I mean, I hate it. I think it's the most ridiculous game.
Oh.
But, you know, if I'm getting into it, it's like, oh, you know, I want Germany to win this game or, you know, beat these guys. Oh.
As my father would say, everyone in the world's favorite game.
Not mine. I think it's ridiculous.
How about lacrosse? Are you watching lacrosse?
No. Did I ever tell you what's the French word for dead-end sport?
Lacrosse.
On that note.
Before we transition to the break and then Ronnie Svoboda, NBA.
What is your favorite subject? What is that? I don't care.
The Knicks stink. And they will stink for a long time.
Yes.
And we've talked about it before in the show. I am, it's sad that in a city like this, we have a team like that.
I couldn't care less. You know what? I cared about the Knicks when Jerry Lucas and Bill Bradley and Clyde, when I was a little kid, I watched them. And Havlicek was on the Celtics. That was interesting.
There's a long time. And let's talk about hockey.
Hockey. We talk about hockey on this station. That's not like the FAN.
Well, you know, the New York Rangers will be in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to go very far, though.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so. I think they're two rounds tops.
I think their high water mark for this quad was a couple years ago.
Yeah.
When LA beat them, that was their shot.
Yeah.
You know, you look back and you see, well, what team? When did the team have a shot? That was their shot.
Yeah, they did.
And you know, unfortunately, I don't mean to be harsh and cold, but I think that's it. What do you think about the Islanders?
Who?
The Icelanders.
It's not
the same when they're in Brooklyn.
No, it's honestly, listen, I'm not an Islander fan.
No.
I've been an Islander hater my whole life. I think it's a shame that they're not out here for the fans.
You know what?
I really do.
And I do. You know, look, I'm a transplant, as you know, to Long Island, and I grew up a Ranger fan. But I will say there's a lot of friends of mine are Islander fans, and I feel... I don't hate them like I did when I was younger.
Yeah, because they've been so bad for so long.
I
grew up, I mean, I'm a big hockey fan, you know.
Yes.
And my family, like, you know, if you rooted for the Islanders, you were like...
Well, yeah, me too. Well, growing up in Yonkers, we were Ranger fans. And
right. The only reason, though, that you say that about them is because they've literally stunk for the last 20 years.
But I'm getting older. I'm mellowing out.
Yeah, me too. The edge
is coming off, unfortunately.
And before we transition to the break and Ron... what's your prediction for the NFL this year for your New York football Giants?
My football Giants, I have the same prediction I have every year. Super Bowl. Win the Super Bowl. You know what? You know what I will say? Eli's not and never has been and never will be the problem. He's not the problem. You know what? We have 20 seconds on the Giants?
Yeah, of course.
The best thing the Giants did this year, what was the one thing the Giants could not do last year?
Last year they just finished or the year before?
Just this last year.
What they couldn't do?
They couldn't run the ball.
Can't run the rock.
They couldn't run the ball at all.
And how's that going to change this year?
You know what? I think it's going to help it a little. Brandon Marshall. The reason why, I think that was a really good under-the-radar signing for the... Not that it was under the radar, but I think it was, people didn't say, the Giants need a wide receiver. There are 9 guys on offense that block on a running play. The only 2 that don't block are the running back himself and
right.
Eli. Eli's not blocking. He's off this. Don't get him hurt.
Yeah.
You go stand over there, Eli. And if you think about it, the 3 wide receivers, the Giants, they were always in that same set. Right? That's one of the McAdoo's issues. They're always in that same set. And they had Victor Cruz, Odell Beckham Jr., and, you know,
Shepherd.
Slot in the third guy, usually Shepherd, right? They're all undersized guys. Those are 3 out of 9. It's 30% of the blockers are little. Like, Odell's great, but he's not. If you've ever seen him live, he's built like a, you know, he's built solid, but he's not big.
No, of course.
Marshall's not a moose. That won't hurt.
You know, with Marshall, I'll tell you, he's been in the NFL how many years? 9, 10 years?
Many, yeah.
How many playoff games do you think he's made?
Probably 0.
There you go.
But you know what? What's with the Steelers?
He started with my team. No, he started with my team. He started with the Broncos. Him and Jay Cutler, which was like the Mercurial 1 and Mercurial 2.
Cutler.
But the only thing I'll say about Marshall, good football player, but when things go bad around a football team with him around, they tend to go worse.
No,
he's volatile. He's very, you know, he's great now, but if things start to slip, and listen, Odell and him together, You know, oh, we'll be nice. I'm more mature. Mm-hmm. Brandon Marshall has been toxic his whole career. I'm just warning, when things are not going well, just be careful of that combo.
You know what?
Be a little careful of that combo.
That is a very good, fair warning.
Because he has been toxic in his career.
Warning. Well, though, but he is entering the football equivalent of the Yankees, you know, the Giants. You know, it's an old, you know, it's the NFL franchise. It's, you know, it's the
hallowed grounds.
They're very, you know.
MetLife Stadium.
That's right.
That's in right. East Rutherford, New Jersey.
That's
the punter, Dave Jennings, number 13.
Number 13, Dave Jennings.
Jim Gordon used to do the
Jim Gordon. Shoot
the puck, Barry.
All right, guys, we are now at the 9:30 point. We are going to take a quick break and be back on the other side of the break with Rocky Ronnie Swobode, everybody. Be right back.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Sports Talk 1240. Paul Spiteri and Jerry Whipler here tonight. Just want to give a shout-out to my son, Robbie, at home, who just said, Dad, give me a shout-out. Jerry, how could I not accommodate? And
hey, Robbie.
To my son, Matt, and my daughter, Mia, and Jerry, to your kids, to give a shout-out.
This will take. How much longer do we have on the show? I have a lot of kids. I have.
What are you, Larry Johnson?
Hey, Bridget up. Hello. Shout-out to my big daughter, Bridget, up in Holy Cross, up in Worcester. And Jerry, Matt Spiteri's buddy, Jerry, and his twin sister, Caroline, and Caitlin.
Great. So,
and my wife, Colleen.
Shout out to all the kids and family at home listening to the show. And everyone, I want to now welcome Mr. Ron Swobode. Ron, are you there?
Yeah, I sat through your whole family album.
Well, Ron, good thing I didn't have like 20 kids, so we might have put you to sleep.
Yeah, you're good at home. You're good at home. So yeah. Let's talk a little baseball. What the heck?
Hey, Ron, first I want to thank you so much for coming on. I had the pleasure of meeting Ron at the Mets Fantasy Camp in 2012, and my brother Andy also met Ron a couple of camps that he attended. Ron,
Well, Andy played for me, man. I wore him out. He didn't think he was as much a pitcher as I did, and he did a great job for me. So, yeah, and he's been to New Orleans where I live, and, you know, We've remained friends. We text a good bit, so I stay in touch with him.
Yeah, I don't think he's still walking the same, Ron, after you ran him out there for 25 innings.
Well, he roots for the Eagles in football, and of course, I'm in the land of the New Orleans Saints, so yeah. We have a tenuous relationship there.
Well, Ron, again, thank you so much for coming on. It's a great honor for us and pleasure, and I want to introduce you to my co-host, and good friend of mine, Jerry Whipler, who's a huge fan of yours, and I'm going to let him talk to you a bit about some questions he has and kind of take you through a little bit of a journey of being a Met fan and being a big fan of yours for a long time. Jerry, take it from here.
Thanks.
Hey, Jerry, how you doing, man?
I'm very well, Ron. thanks very much for joining us tonight. Yeah, Paul.
Oh, this is fun.
Yeah, Paul's. I'm going to try not. I'm trying to ask questions that you haven't heard of 5,000 times, but just by when it's not me, it's about you and what your thoughts are. But I was 7 when the Mets won in '69, and just about getting into baseball, just doing Little League.
Not the worst thing that could happen to you at 7 years old.
No.
Unless you were a Yankee fan.
Well, as I was telling Paul earlier before
I came
on.
Or an Oriole fan. I'm actually in Baltimore right now where my dad just celebrated his 95th birthday. How about that?
God bless him.
Wow. God bless
him. So, you know, when we beat the Orioles, I had a whole lot of relatives who were upset with me.
So you grew up an Oriole fan, I would imagine.
I did indeed. And, you know, the O's were a big deal when I was a kid. We didn't get to go as many games, but you knew who they were, you knew how they hit. You know, I used to hit rocks out here in front of my house across the street into the woods, and they had a gravel road. Our road was a gravel road back then, and I used to hit, you know, gravel rocks for practice, practicing the stances of, you know, Gus Triandos and Gene Woodling and all Brooks Robinson on my favorite Orioles.
So that's what I was going to ask. So who, when you were a little kid, who was your Ron Swoboda? Who was your hero?
Well, my dad worked with a big catcher named Gus Triandos. Gus, you know, in those days, ball players didn't make enough money to sit around, you know, counting their change in the off season. They went out and looked for jobs, and Gus went to work at an automobile dealership selling cars. Here, and my dad was a service manager there, or service salesman, I'm not sure what, but he and Gus became friends, and Gus came to my house and had dinner, and you know, when he ducked under the door frame to come in the house, I knew that was a big man, and so he and my dad were friends, and I rooted like heck for him when he was an Oriole.
That's outstanding.
Great time.
So Paul and I were going over.
I went to my first spring training in 1964, we played the Philadelphia Phillies, and Gus Triandos was behind home plate, and I introduced myself to him again, and he went, "Wow, that must mean I'm getting old."
That's tremendous.
And he was. That was his next to last season in the big league.
Wow, that's cool. So what was, aside, obviously, you know, the '69 World Series. Of your with your time with the Mets, what sticks out, especially now that as we all get older, looking back, you have a ton of happy memories, but what's one of the things that always comes back to your mind that you think about that's a happy memory about that time?
You know, I've sat down and written my memoirs in a fairly rough form from spring training in '69 all the way through when we clinched the National League pennant, and you can go online, look up all these games, play by play, everything, pitch by, you know, bat at bat by at bat, and look at the box scores. You can retrieve all that information. What I still can't explain to myself is, you know, how this team gathered from a fairly mediocre start. You know, for the Mets as a franchise. That, you know, I mean, that might be underselling it a little bit. If we were hovering around 500, that was improvement for the New York Mets. But if you were going to be in any kind of serious competition, you know, you needed to do a little better than that. And, you know, we had Don Clendenin was picked up. We knew we had a pretty good pitching staff, but, you know, the Cubs were the team full of future Hall of Famers, and they were running strong, and we were just kind of okay. And we started gathering, you know, after the All-Star break, we gathered together a couple of pretty good runs, you know, pretty 111 in a row at one point, had a bunch of extended win streaks, couldn't catch the Cubs, just couldn't catch the Cubs. And we felt like for a long time we were going to be, you know, like the pumpkin in somebody else's Cinderella story. And then in a matter of 10 days in September, we went from 5 games behind to 5 games in front. That's a 10-game turnaround on the Cubs who finally hit a, they finally hit a flat spot. They finally went a little bad, and when they did, we rolled by them and never looked back.
Yeah, that wasn't like you guys.
How that happened, I'm not sure. I quite understand how that all came together. It just did.
Well, yeah, it happened quickly, and you know what I know of it is reading about it. I very vaguely remember it. I was too little, but you know they talk about that doubleheader. You guys swept the Expos in beginning of September, and then the Cubs had lost, and then pretty much from there, that's where you guys picked up a lot of momentum.
Well, there was a point where we beat Pittsburgh in a doubleheader and beat them 1-0, 1-0, and Jerry Kuzman pitched a 9-inning shutout and drove in the only run. And then the second game, Don Cardwell, a pitcher, drove in the only run. Right. He went 5 innings and got the win. We had a 1-0, 1-0 games against Pittsburgh, and the pitchers drove in the only run.
Well, didn't you had a grand slam against them, didn't you, that week?
I had a there was a run in that series. I think that was the series where I hit a
right, you got a home run. But apart from that, it was the pitchers.
We were a bunch of pitchers with an offense that, we had a couple of pretty good hitters, Tommy Agee, Cleon Jones, Don Clendenin, but those were the bigger bats in the lineup. Art Chansky was having a pretty good year after, a sore back out of spring training, and we didn't frighten anybody with our bats. We were a pitching staff. If we could give them 3 runs, we had a chance.
Right, right. And I was trying to explain to Paul. Talk to Paul a little bit. Tell him about the game against Carlton in September. There was something different about that.
Yeah, that was later, and it was It was just one of those days where I was struggling, and went down. St. Louis was, we were in St. Louis. Wasn't like we were auguring in or anything, but we went in there, and by then we had a bunch of pretty good runs, and just personally, my game was feeling a little raggedy. My offense, my swing, I didn't feel very good. I asked Ralph Kiner. They had a batting cage in St. Louis, one of the first big league stadiums to have a batting cage out behind the left field fence. And I went out there with Ralph Kiner, and they had one of those little machines with the wheels that you could feed the balls through it, and it would throw you, he went out there and fed me a bunch of balls. He was kind enough. We didn't have what you would call a hitting coach then. It just didn't exist. You know, that position with the Mets didn't exist. And it didn't exist in a lot of other places around Major League Baseball back in 1959. Now you have 2 hitting coaches on most big league teams. So that whole attitude about coaching changed. But Kiner, was kind enough to go out there. And he wasn't, he just fed me balls, said, how'd that feel? Try and, get your hands back a little more. Do that, just see. He just tried to put me in a position where I looked like I could get to the ball a little bit. And I started, I don't know if it was the attention or the extra swings. I really don't know what it was, because we didn't get a lot of swings in batting practice on the road. But I was, I felt like, for some reason, I felt like I found a little something. And the trick with me was hanging on to it. But I went right out there in the game and here's Steve Carlton throwing about as good as he can throw, and we get down 1-0. I hit a fastball over the left field wall with a runner aboard. We take a 2-1 lead. He strikes me out the second time, and they take a 3-2 lead, and I hit a 2-run home run off a slider, and after he had struck me out the second time, we take a 4-3 lead after I hit the second home run and hang on to beating 4-3. And, the weirdest thing was Harry Carey was broadcasting the Cardinal games on the radio. That game was not on television. And he had me on the post-game show, and I walked in there, and there was Steve Carlton sitting there. You talk about an awkward moment. and, and he looked like somebody just told him his dog got run over by a car.
Well, you struck out 19 guys and you lose.
What in the... Yeah, I mean, you know, here's a guy who had one of the greatest days of his life. He struck out 19 guys. He had two stripes on me when I took him deep to beat him. It just didn't make any sense.
That's great.
That I got him. I did. And I got him twice. And, you know, I didn't hit the ball well off of him anyway. I think I might have had three or four base hits my whole career off him, and I had a game like that. And so he had every reason to be sitting there in, you know, total disbelief.
Well, did you ever see him afterwards? Did he ever say anything to you like at a reunion
or
a gathering?
He was a champion. You know, he's a Hall of Fame guy. And, you know, I was a little bump in the road to the Hall of Fame for him, you know. You notice, too, if you look at his numbers, and when he went over to the Phillies from the Cardinals, it seemed like he lost some ball games as a Cardinal, that he stopped losing, making mistakes at the wrong time, the hitters that shouldn't have hit him. He didn't do that as much with the Phillies. He was a better pitcher later on. He got into Taekwondo and I think became a better athlete and just had a, you know, he was more of a warrior and didn't make those silly, unforced errors, you know?
Rod, a quick question for you. Toughest pitcher you ever faced? Who comes to mind?
Well, I always, you know, Bob Gibson was, to me, the guy that, you know, I'm 72 years old. If Bob Gibson walks in a room and I'm in there, I get an uneasy feeling. you know, and I'm talking about right now. I mean, the guy didn't want you to hit a foul ball. I mean, he was the most angrily aggressive pitcher, athlete I ever saw on the field.
How would he translate? I was curious about.
Now, he was in a hurry. I'll tell you what. Yeah. He was in a hurry to beat you, too. He used to shut us out in about 2 hours. And when Casey Stengel was, you know, finally retired after he broke his hip in 1965, Wes Westrum ended up with the job for a while. And Wes's idea, you know, Wes was a good baseball guy. I don't know what kind of a manager he was going to be. But he had this big idea against Bob Gibson, who really liked to pitch fast. He was going to have us, you know, have us call timeout, go back, get some pine tar, you know, step out, step back in, step out, call time, you know, and annoy Gibson, you know, frustrate him, right? The net result was instead of shutting us out in 2 hours, he shut us out in 2.5 hours.
And you made him mad.
That was and he was really PO'd. He was really PO'd. But, that, you know, I mean, you could do a lot of things. I mean, Bob Gibson was the reason they lowered the mound about, you know, a few inches.
68.
Because, you know, he had that 1.16 ERA in 68, was it? And lost, like, 9 games, I think, that year, which is like, how?
Yeah, how did
that happen? I'd say he got shut out a few times.
Hey, you mentioned Casey Stengel earlier. Now, Casey, you know, by the time he was with the Mets, he's older, and you know, he seemed like he played up the crazy character persona. But he was so successful; he had such a long career. Talk about Casey for a minute. Did you see any evidence? And you know, did he give you any good baseball insight beyond the jokes?
Look, Casey Stengel. If he occasionally played the clown with the Mets, he did it because he understood what was necessary at that point with a terrible team that you couldn't win with. But they hired the perfect guy for an expansion team back when expansion in baseball in 1962 guaranteed you a terrible team because you didn't get access to enough good players to put together a good team. You were gonna, they let you in the door, they gave you a, you know, they let you buy a franchise, but you weren't gonna get access to for good players right off the get-go. You know, you were going to get players that mostly other teams didn't want. And you're not going to win with that. And you know, you might have three or four guys that can play a little bit on your roster, but that's about it. So Engel knew what the deal was. He knew you're in New York, a brand new franchise. He just allowed his personality to run as only Casey could and kept the writers interested and amused, which was even more important. And, you know, he knew what was up, you know, and it was an amazing performance by Stengel. I think in some ways, for people who really didn't understand what it was about, he may have tarnished his legend a little bit from the winning days with the Yankees, but he was absolutely in control of what was going on. He knew what he was trying to do, and that was keep the media guys happy so they didn't turn on the franchise until you got a little better. And I guarantee you, when Casey was sitting there and we were a good team winning in 1969 and winning a World Series in front of him, I was as proud of that as anything. And Johnny Murphy, the general manager, those guys, to be alive for us to do that, given what they went through with those early days with the Mets, you know, they still hold the record for 120 losses in a major league season. If that's not the, you know, that's the benchmark for frustration and inability.
Yeah, that's a good point about those guys were all still around, and it was only a couple of years earlier that they were awful. And for you guys to do what you did, that had to make them feel good.
That made me feel like we did something. And I was aware of those guys because everybody's trying to win, you know. Everybody's trying to win. Even, you know, you can look at a team and look at the moves they make or don't make and, you know, and come to all kinds of conclusions. But everybody's trying to win. And takes a lot of smart, takes a lot of work, takes a lot of good scouting for a team to win and to stay competitive, especially today.
So, Ron, it's Paul here. So we have about a minute or two before we have to wrap up, and I want to close with moving to today and this season for the New York Mets. Tell me what you think about the team
and what
you think this season's going to be.
I think the Mets are in really good shape to start this season. I mean, they've got starting rotation with the best potential. We're going to have to, you know, the closers, you know, Addison Reed, who's done it, was very successful a few years back with the Chicago White Sox, and you know, Till Familia is back from his suspension, but I think we're going to field a pretty darn good team, and I'm excited about it. I'm a Mets fan, and I live and die with them, and go to the fantasy camp as you mentioned, and just you know, I care what this team does. It's my team, you know. I'm not in New York, but it's my team, and I think they'll be right there. They're going to find out right away with Atlanta tomorrow, and find out how they stand in the National League East. I think the East is going to be a little tougher with the Nats and Atlanta. I think Atlanta's on the come,
and the Phillies,
you know,
too.
Our team here, I do color for the AAA franchise of the Marlins, and the Marlins are going to be, I think, competitive.
Yeah.
So that East is getting to be a little tougher deal, but I think the Mets are relevant and they're going to be there.
Yeah,
you don't know what's going to happen, but I think they have every reason to feel like, hey, from day one, you're in this thing.
Right.
With Cespedes, had a great spring. I think they'll, you know, as Drupal, Cabrera, shortstop, I think you keep those guys up. I think Bruce is going to, I think he's going to start the way he finished last year. I think he's going to be fine. Granderson, I really think they're going to be okay. Duda is if he stays healthy, he needs to turn, you know, he needs to turn the light on again and be a force, and he can be. So I think they're in as good a shape. I think they're as good a shape as they could hope to be
for 2017 coming out of the shoot.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. The optimism is high here in Long Island and in Queens, and we're looking forward to season. And, Ron, if you're ever up here in New York, Jerry and I'd love to take you to a game and watch a ball game with someone like you. It would be unbelievable to get your insight one day.
Yeah, I get out there a little bit when I have an opportunity. City Field is a great place to watch a game, not
Yeah, it certainly is. But, Ron, listen, thank you so much for joining us. Maybe we'll get back on during the season, and we'll touch base with you again and get an update on how the Zephyrs are doing and how our Mets are doing.
It's not the Zephyrs. It's the Baby Cakes.
Oh, the Baby
They renamed the team, and I know you can hardly get that out of your mouth.
Yeah. Baby Cakes.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. The Baby Cakes.
Baby Cakes.
Yeah.
Hey, Ron, thanks very much.
You guys take care.
Thanks, Ron.
Have a great night.
So, everyone, that's the great Ron Svoboda. Jerry, what's amazing listening to Ron, right? I mean, you obviously followed his career. That wasn't a fight between my parents yet when Ron was playing. But I'm amazed at the ability to the recollection of everything, not just a story here or there, the details.
Yeah, he remembers, and that stuff that stuff happened almost 50 years ago.
Yeah,
but
I can't remember what I did yesterday.
What time is it?
Yeah.
It's funny though, but that's something you notice with a lot of athletes, especially baseball players. I guess football players to some extent, but it's not as stat driven a game.
Well,
as baseball.
Football players also take a.
That's another hour.
Right.
But ball players can. I mean, I remember Ralph Kiner used to be able to come back and he'd say, it was a Tuesday night in Pittsburgh
and it was raining and I had four Reingold
and they remember what the count was. They remember what they hit, what pitch they hit.
He said he hit a slider. I hit a slider. I mean, how do you remember
a slider? When Carlton throws you a fastball, you remember, and when he throws a slider, you remember.
It's unbelievable to me. I hear this, and you and I are baseball purists, right? We love the game. We look at our kids today, and there's not the love of baseball like what we had. But what I love about it, Jerry, and I think you feel the same, is that is the memory, the details, how we grew up listening to baseball on the radio, like Bob Murphy, and he would describe, "Oh, it's a beautiful spring day here in a big ballpark."
Hi, everybody. Hi, puppy cumulus clouds.
Right.
It's a beautiful day for baseball.
A screeching line
the trickling gets by Buckner. The thing is
it's so amazing. I guess it's hard to
more so than any other sport.
Yeah.
It ties generations together. So you're talking to a 72-year-old guy, which 72 is not old anymore, right?
Right.
You
listen to him. He sounds like he's younger and more spry
than
us,
right? Well, he's done more than us.
Yeah.
But but this is a thing where you can play, and it's more so than any other sport. You can't do this with hockey. You can't do it with basketball. And baseball's the game, and there's a reason why it always has been and remains, I still think, the national pastime, is because of that connectivity. You did the same thing.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. And listen, we're going to wrap up tonight here at Sports Talk 1240. I want to thank Brian, our engineer, Rob Kowal, for giving us the opportunity, and our sponsor, Bunker Ales and Amity Ales. Please visit them. In Amityville, drink Bunker Ale, served at Amity Ales. We could talk a little bit more about it on our next show, and we appreciate the sponsorship. And everyone, thank you for joining us tonight. Jerry, thank you so much for coming on. This has been great.
See you again.
We'll be here again.
That's right.
We will be back. Thank you, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Have a good night.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.